Welcome back to the News and Views of Radio Network. We're talking infrastructure today. We're talking a lot about people collectively getting together, whether it's through certain political subdivisions, whether or not it's people at state government, at federal government. I mean, there's a lot of different people that lay claim and actually have to work together to make sure projects get done. And that's why I love getting a chance to do this show, because we're talking about drainage applications. We're talking about weather stations. We're talking about things that, and I've used this phrase today, I'm going to use it again, that if it goes really well, if it does its job, you just take for granted. And that's the beauty of some of these folks I'm visiting with today. Chuck Fritz is with us. He's the executive director of the International Water Institute. Chuck, good to have you back on News and Views. How you been?
Good, good. Good to see you, Joel.
You Thanks. Like this winter? It's been a good one?
It's been an awesome winter.
I'll take this winter, too. For all those guys that own snowmobiles, tough cookies.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yaba, I'm going to have you say your last name, if you don't mind.
Yeah, certainly. My name is Yaba Kiaskod.
There you go. That was safer for me. But I do know Yaba. I'm good with that. He's the research scientist with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Yaba, talk to me a little bit about what that means. What do you do?
I'm working as a researcher with the State Department of Agriculture, where I manage many of our what we call on-farm demonstration projects. So where we're working with individual farmers to implement practices on their farms that not only will increase or improve their profitability, but might also have environmental benefits.
Okay, give me an example.
So one example is a drainage project we have in Wilkin County, so located between Breckenridge and Rothsay, where we are looking at managing the drainage water. So normally when a farmer puts in a subsurface drainage or tile drains, the way the system works is that whenever there's too much water in the soil, we'll drain it off, which is has some significant agricultural benefits. But especially in northwestern Minnesota, what we often see is we have too much water in the spring, but then we may be coming up short later in the growing season. So once we hit second half of July into August, when the crop really needs that water, well, we might not have enough water for the crop. And so what we're looking at is ways to hold some of that water back, so that the excess water we had in the spring, we are holding it back within the soil so it is available later in the growing season.
So you shut off the pump.
Shut off the pump or shut off the flow of water off the field, so we're only draining as much as we need and, as we say, not a drop more. And so by having that water available to the crop, we can improve the yields that way, but also by reducing the overall amount of water that is leaving the field in the spring, that can help both minimize the risk if there is a flood risk, that we're holding more water back on the land, but we can still farm it. But also at the same time, when drainage water leaves a field, there's some of the crop nutrient nitrogen that leaves with that water, and by holding some of that water back in the field, we're keeping that nitrogen in the field where the crops can use it rather than sending it downstream.
So by your very nature, your interest is science. You're a scientist.
That's correct.
And so when you look at there's enough body of work there now with people that do field drainage where you can take a look at it in terms of what has this meant, how has this worked. Do you do that? Do you look at some analytics that can show a farmer, hey, you need to manage it this way, you can actually benefit financially more this way?
Yes, and that is what this project we have for this in Wilkin County is all about, is to document some of those benefits, both in terms of the what we call agronomic benefits, so improved profitability and crop yields, but also documenting some of those environmental benefits. So it's really a win-win both for not the individual farmers, but also for the environment.
Okay. Chuck, this isn't your first rodeo. I mean, you've been working in water management for a while. I mean, the International Water Institute, explain to people what that is.
The International Water Institute was actually formed after the 1997 flood. There was a FEMA-funded effort called IFMI, the International Flood Mitigation Initiative. A group of regional leaders, politicians, met for a period of 2 years, came up with 14 recommendations to reduce damages from future floods. Two of them had to do with forming an organization that would do watershed research and watershed education. In essence, that's what the Institute does. I'm a nonprofit located here in Fargo. I have 9 full-time staff, and I have a board made up of folks from across North Dakota, Minnesota, and Manitoba.
See, and I think oftentimes you can physically see it as you drive up and down the Red River Valley all the way to Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah.
You can see the different approaches. You can see, you know, it's like going through a soil conservation area where they truly believe in planting trees versus not. I mean, you can see how water is managed differently up and down the I-29.
Oh, yeah, and that's been a challenge. Probably came to light. Most came into focus the most after that, you know, during that 97 flood we saw. Yeah. I mean, we couldn't even make a map of the Red River Basin that easily, right? Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that we try to do is provide information so that people throughout the Red River Basin can make better, more informed decisions.
So great it. I mean, you know, we always can do better. I get it. But are we communicating with our neighbors to the north better than we have in the past?
I'll give it a C, maybe a C minus.
So we can do better.
I think, you know, as we see these large basin events, you see better communication, but it's a cycle, right? You see a big flood and you see a lot of communication and then things wane and people get complacent and you don't have as much communication. But
how hard is it when political leadership changes? I mean, right about the time you get someone educated into why this is vital, then you lose them off a committee or you lose them off, you know.
Yeah, keeping people informed and educated and kind of keeping the cart going the right way is always
difficult.
It's
got to be hard.
Yeah, it's always difficult. I mean, yeah. I've been doing this a long time. And it's.
I just think it's so important what you do. I mean, just to get these folks in a room talking to each other when they all have different fiscal interests. They all have a lot of different interests when it comes to just sheer pride.
The Institute's in a unique position because, you know, my job is to try to provide information to help those people, again, make better informed decisions. The difficult part is, you know, trying to coordinate those, you know, just trying to deal with water issues on a watershed boundary versus a political boundary is always going to raise issues. It's just the nature of who we are.
In my time in the North Dakota Senate, one of the things that I worked on the Natural Resource Committee and also worked on the Tax Committee for a long time, and so it fell into both wheelhouses in terms of how farmers and ranchers had to deal with it. And in North Dakota, I believe for a lot of years we did it wrong. We did compared to
we did
Minnesota.
Different.
Well, we
can argue whether we did it wrong, but you certainly did it different.
Well, here's what I think we did. I think that we. I'll use my home area, for example. And I'm not trying to throw Sargent County under the bus, but Sargent County put it to Richland County, and once it was gone, it was gone. And it was managed in accordance with a county line rather than a watershed. And then Richland County said, you know what, Cass County, here it comes. You know.
Yeah.
And I think North Dakota finally woke up and started realizing watershed was important.
Yeah, and I think the political structure to deal with that better exists on a watershed scale for certain. But, you know, it is all about... Somebody once smarter than me once said there are no problems, only people, and that's really what, when it comes down to water, it's about how you're going to deal with your neighbors and your friends and people downstream and upstream.
The biggest problem, you guys, that you must have a challenge to deal with it is how I began this conversation. One of the only times that they're willing to sit down and talk about what you need to work on is when they're the most emotional about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to be hard.
It is. Oh, yeah, it is. Well, and sometimes it's only, as you say, when the problem arises that it gets to the forefront of people's attention. And then you might be in a situation that's very difficult to deal with. It might even be in a almost like an emergency situation. And at that time, it can be difficult to do something about it if you don't have a long-term plan.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, you're right. And, you know, some of those challenges can be overcome with data and with a common understanding of data, which is what we try to do.
If they're willing to listen.
If they're willing to listen, yeah.
I mean, that's a big part of it. I thought your statement about, you know, there aren't any problems, there's just people, is a very fair comment. You guys stick around. I've got to visit with you a little bit more. Welcome back to News and Views, where we're getting a chance today to talk about infrastructure that deals with water, moving water, storing water, saving homes, quite frankly, and helping grow crops. And that's what we're talking about right now. Chuck Fritz, I'm going to talk to him about lighter in just a second. But Yoder, your last name again. I'm sorry, sir.
Yes, God.
Okay, if I don't ask you this at the Manor VFW Hall some night, they're going to be mad at me. What nationality is that?
I'm from Denmark.
Denmark.
Yeah.
Well, okay. How do you end up working for the state of Minnesota? What was her name?
Well, Laura.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I came in grad school to Minnesota, and it was just supposed to be for 1 year, and then it was almost 2 years and 3 years, and now it's been, 15 years? So
you love it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
good to have you here.
Yep.
Great to have you here. Chuck, talk to him about LIDAR. What is this all about?
LIDAR, so it stands for Light Detecting and Ranging. It's a technology to accurately estimate the Earth's surface. It's a project that we just finished. We actually, our first effort, LIDAR effort, was done in 2008 and 2009. Back then, when I'd say the word LIDAR, people would give me some blank stares. In essence, LIDAR is a way to accurately estimate the Earth's surface, elevation on the Earth's surface. And we just finished up the second kind of the follow-up project. We did about 20,000, just about a fifth of the state of Minnesota. We just finished that collect, and it's an amazing data set that allows people to make better, more informed decisions. I'm not sure what else you want to know about it,
John. Well, I want to know what you learned about it that you didn't know going in.
Excuse me. Like I said, back in 1997, the best elevation data that we had was 30-meter data, the old USGS quadrangle maps. This new data set basically allows us to estimate within 3 centimeters of accuracy, roughly 2 inches, the elevation on the Earth's surface, about one point every 0.35 meters.
That's amazing.
So we just collected...
That's absolutely amazing. Yeah,
we just collected about 25 terabytes of data.
So why is the data useful?
Engineers, watershed districts, counties, road folks, they use these data every day to develop projects, to model how water flows across the Earth's surface, looks at the effects of projects, whether or not they'll be effective.
It's like the ultimate survey.
It is the ultimate survey. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you can say that no water flows downhill. Yeah. And so that's what this data helps show.
And when we're talking about the Red River Basin, the valley proper, it's very flat. And so that kind of accuracy allows us to understand how that water flows across the Earth's surface and what will happen if we start to alter that flow.
I'm curious how much it changes.
You'd be surprised. We're doing some work comparing the old data set with the new data set, and you'd be surprised. I mean, even, a guy who's on his field and did some drainage activities, you can see that. You know, you can see those changes on the Earth's surface, and it's quite remarkable. Most of the changes you'll see are around the urban areas because you have development and things like that, but when you're out in the rural areas, it's quite amazing whether a new road gets put in, a road is raised, even to the point where new culverts are put in. We're
sediment.
Able to identify that. Yeah. Yep. And how the streams migrate laterally across the Earth's surface, you're able to see that.
How long does it take to collect the data?
We did our collect in a fall and a spring, so 20,300 square miles. We did that in... I don't remember how many flights there were, but we did it in a fall and a spring collect.
Well, you two clearly were the smarty pantses in school. I just want to get that out of the way. See?
You find good people.
You didn't have to worry about staying eligible to play football or hockey. I can tell that. So, all right, guys, thanks. Thanks for giving me time. Appreciate you coming on, and I'm sure we're going to do this again someday, or at least I hope we do. So,
thanks, Joel.
Sounds great. Thanks for having us.
You bet.